Welcome to Pocketoid, the internet's longest running handheld gaming podcast that is now recording its 200th episode. My name is Jordan, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jackal27. With me, as always, is my gorgeous co-host.
It's me, Addison. You can follow me on the internet at Addison_L.
And you can follow the show on the internet at Pocketoid, wherever good podcast social media links are found. You can also find a link to join our Discord in our pinned tweet, or you can find that link on our website at pocketoidpodcast.com, and you can find all our other stuff there too, yada yada. You know where to find the show stuff. This is episode 200. I hope you've been listening before now, but just in case you haven't, this episode, we wanted to do something very special because, like we said, it's our 200th episode, but also because the landscape of handheld video games are about to change in a really cool way. And so this week, we have a couple of special guests with us.
Hi, I'm Arissa. So I am the developer relations lead for Playdate specifically. And basically that means I communicate with all developers, whether that's the ones that released their game in season one that's included in your playdate, or the just the developers around the world that are making cool stuff for playdate, and also help out on the side on game publishing side of things, games that are pitching to us and all sorts of things.
I'm Nevin Mergen, and I'm a designer at Panic working on playdate. I work on design of pretty much anything that needs to be designed around it. I work on the branding, the packaging, stuff like that, the OS that runs on the Playdate, our website, and some of the games as well in season one.
Awesome. Well, we are very thankful to have you guys with us. And as they already said, and I forgot to say, this week we are covering the Playdate, which is the new piece of handheld gaming hardware from Panic. And Panic is mostly known for, you guys have mostly been known for software, actually, up until this point. Specifically known for software up until this point. And so I'm really excited to hear about the differences between, creating software versus creating a new piece of hardware. I think one of the reasons that me and Addison are so excited about the Playdate is because, we've been huge into handheld gaming pretty much our whole lives, specifically. But especially the last few years, the landscape of that has changed a lot with Nintendo kind of moving their main console into a sort of handheld hybrid and, other handhelds kind of disappearing. It's cool to see this sort of throwback handheld device releasing in this modern landscape that sort of has all these, smaller indie developers, but also some larger names behind it as well. And so I'm really excited to hear about the story behind the Playdate. I would love to get a quick rundown of what the Playdate is for those who might be unaware of the specifics.
Yeah, what is the Playdate? So Playdate is a tiny game handheld system.
It's adorable.
It's yellow.
Cute, yellow little cube. I love it.
Yep, it's adorable. And it has a crank. And no, the crank does not power up the handheld system. It's a...
Do you guys look at that question? Do you guys look at that question a lot? I'm assuming yes.
Yes.
Once
or twice. We do. Yeah, and it's black and white screen. Nevin, anything else I should add?
It's different. It does a lot of things very differently from how a lot of handheld and gaming systems in general have sort of converged on a certain kind of thing, and we sort of wanted to do something different, and then hopefully that's fun for people and it leads to some new creative solutions.
Yeah, and I like that the Playdate has this, crank, which is obviously the thing everyone talks about. It's like, oh, it's a little handheld with the crank. And yeah, it is. But for me, the thing that I was actually the most exciting is this kind of model of game release that you're doing where your games kind of come out in seasons where they sort of release automatically, week to week for users. I'm curious why you guys decided to go that route as opposed to, making a store and people purchase the games they want individually. Why was this the route you wanted to go with the actual game releases?
I'll open with an anecdote. It was years ago when the streaming services started producing their own shows and they were doing the binge model where they would put the whole season, on there at once. And some of us noticed that we talked about the shows for like 2 days. And then once everyone saw everything, it just evaporated. That was it. And I think that proved to us why there is this, you know, much longer established notion of releasing things weekly, monthly, you know, in like seasons in the fall and in the spring. It kind of fits into people's lifestyles a little better, I think. It's a little more manageable. And we thought it would be interesting to do something like that. We knew from the get-go that we wanted to surprise with the playdate as much as we could. And this felt like a way to sort of create, you know, a bunch of little birthday slash Christmas events in a row where something's coming, but you don't know exactly what. I mean, you know, people like surprises. Some people are more open to it. Others are more impatient and they really want to know what it is, but everybody likes getting a thing in the end. And so we were hoping that, you know, we'd appeal to people who would find that fun.
It's really interesting that you guys brought up the streaming example, because I actually just kind of was talking with someone last night about kind of the troubles that the company Netflix has been having recently, with, you know, losing subscribers and some other things. And one of the things that they really touched on is when you look at a show like Succession on HBO, it's been talked about steadily over the years, even though it didn't make a giant splash at first, because they release week to week each episode. Whereas, you know, something on Netflix drops all at once, and you're right, people binge it, and then it just kind of, it has this huge spike, right, in interest, and then it just kind of vanishes, and it doesn't have those long legs to carry it out. And so that's really interesting that you guys would it make that same observation from streaming, that now we're kind of all, even before, you know, anyone was even having that kind of conversation about streaming content, it seems like.
And on a similar note, I've noticed personally that, like, if I get into something that has, you know, all of this, you know, backlog that I am able to go through and binge, but maybe it is being released weekly still, I tend to like have more motivation to get through that backlog rather than if it was a show that just all dumped at the same time. Like what came to mind was like Euphoria. Like I had some friends that got me into Euphoria, and I, you know, binged everything that was there, and then, you know, was able to watch with them when the new episodes were coming out, and having that kind of appointment viewing, as they call it, like, and having that motivation to be caught up so that I can, you know, talk with people about those new episodes.
Yeah, and originally, you know, we wanted that same experience, right? Where everyone who got a playdate can experience the same games at the same time. But of course, with hardware and where people live, you're not getting the device at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So now we just have the staggered, like, once you launch your playdate, the season one starts. And so hopefully with, you know, future, you know, now that people are getting their play dates, that we can actually time it to where people are getting the games at the same time.
With future seasons? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we're hoping for a future season. I mean, hopefully people like this format. But I mean, that's definitely
something you'd like to see, I'm sure. It's cool to me too, though, because I've actually got a couple friends that already have playdates and are working on games for it, and so it's not just that there will be these, you know, seasoned or staggered releases. Other folks can also release games to be sideloaded to the playdate, correct?
Yeah, it's really great because we wanted to make sure we're providing like an open, like no gatekeeping sort of thing, where it's really easy for people who want to make games to also be able to easily distribute their game in however they want. And right now people can sell their game or just distribute it on their website or on some other game store like Itch. And we're seeing a lot of games already. It's really cool.
Yeah, and that's awesome how folks can even just like sell those individually, like on, like you said, on something like Itch. We have Picross, the game Picross is kind of a meme in our Discord because they all play Picross. They're a bunch of Picross weirdos, and someone in our Discord has one, and I went to see what she'd done with it, and she just immediately programmed and released a Picross game for the playdate.
That's awesome.
I was very happy to see that. I was like, that's really cool that you can just, you know, that there will already be a few things out there to explore even this early in the game.
Jordan, we prefer the term Picross perverts.
I know that, one of the things that really has really stuck out to me is it kind of seems, I know you guys have had to push back the release a couple times, and you talked a little bit, Arissa, about, you know, releasing, had the challenges of releasing a piece of hardware. But also, I have to imagine that doing all of this in the last few years in particular has not been the easiest thing with as far as, you know, we've heard about chip shortages, and we've got supply chain issues, and we've got, you know, even just folks that couldn't work in the same office, et cetera, for a season. And so I'm curious what, it's been an incredibly difficult season, and I'm sure for you guys especially, but I'm curious, like, why did you go to all this trouble to make the play date? What about this project did you believe in so much to make it a reality? Why did you want to make this in the first place?
I was there when we first started talking about Playdate, and it's one of those things, when we first talked about it, it was so out of our comfort zone, and honestly out of our skill zone, that it sounded cool, like the way, you know, you talk about going to the, you know, Galapagos someday, but the practicalities of it, we were mostly just kind of like squinting and like putting our fingers in our ears and like pretending like we can't see them. And then eventually, as the sort of, as the snowball started, you know, rolling and gathering some mass, we kind of had to learn a lot and set up a lot of stuff. And it was just like kind of eventually you're like tumbling down the stairs quickly, and you have to just like keep your feet in front of you so you don't, you know, fall on your head. So it was just like it had its own momentum, both in terms of, you know, well, we've invested all this stuff, you know, we have to work on it. And also it just kept getting cooler. I mean, the very early prototypes of it that were just like 3D printed and like a board with a bunch of wires sticking out, it was already cool to see. And so mainly what was driving it was just the fact that it was too cool to ignore, you know? And so, yeah, we just couldn't stop. And then at some point, you know, you're paying for like setup fees at a factory, and you're, you know, getting parts milled and stuff. And so, yeah, there wasn't like one meeting where we all went, this is a real thing now. It's just that it like became a fixture of our company weekly meetings. And there was sort of this unspoken understanding that, yeah, I think we're going to make like a, you know, a handheld gaming console now.
Awesome. I think a lot of people that are used to gaming devices and controllers that, you know, we're all used to them looking and functioning pretty similar. You know, the Switch Pro controller looks a lot like an Xbox controller, et cetera, et cetera. And so, like, and I think that it's like, even when you look at like these, you know, these Chinese emulation handhelds that come out, all of them look very familiar and have very familiar button layouts. And when you look at the Playdate, it's very different. And so I have to ask, you know, why the crank? Why was that the thing you guys were drawn to on this guy?
I think it's just really awesome that we made a handheld system that has a brand new game mechanic.
Yeah.
That helps, like, you know, game developers be like, oh, this is like a new thing I can make for my game that is not just buttons. It's like crank that I can use. And actually, we had reached out to Teenage Engineering to help, you know, with the design of Playdate, and they had, Jesper had come up with the design of the crank, and I think there were other mechanics as well, like some like touch bar, but it sounded like we were most interested in the crank. Maybe Nevin can explain more since he's been at Panic a lot longer.
So Teenage Engineering is the Swedish industrial design company, and they do like super polished design that's also really fun. It's not holding back. Yeah. And we talked to them to help us with the industrial design of this. And we kind of described the parameters that we had in mind. And one of those sort of just like big blanks on that questionnaire was like, what else can it do that we didn't think of? And Jesper, the main designer at Teenage Engineering, just loves that sort of question. So I have a feeling that was like in a matter of hours, it was probably days, but in my head, it's like hours where he sent us back like full 3D renderings where this thing had a crank immediately. He had, yeah, like a plunger, like on a, you know, like on a pinball cabinet on it, you know,
oh, and
like
awesome.
All these super weird inputs,
yeah.
Like pressure sensitive areas of the whole thing. And we were like, oh my God, this is all amazing. Of course, once you sit down and you start talking about how to engineer this, we realized, okay, well, we kind of have to pick our battles here. You know, it can't do all of these things. And the crank was definitely from the get-go, that was the one that everybody was responding to because it seemed so ridiculous, down to the word crank. You know, it's just such a goofy word. And just the motion of you, you know, turning it is so silly. So yeah, we knew we wanted to go with that. Would it be worth doing it without the crank? I feel like maybe not. You know, it's like not special enough, even with the other things that stand out about the playdate. You know, there's plenty of gaming systems out there. We don't need to contribute one more that's like 5% different from everything else. So we were always thinking, well, either we do this because it's different and interesting, or it's just not really worth our time.
Yeah, and that
So
makes
this
sense too,
felt like
because
it was.
I remember it's like I remember seeing it initially, and some people being like, you know, oh, it looks like a Game Boy, and it's like without the crank, that's exactly what people would say, right? And it's like, why do I need this already? And so the crank really does help it stand out. I guess for me, it's just like I think I'm super into indie games and just weird little creative games, you know, releasing for everything. And so I, you know, for me, I'm like, I would love to have a little handheld with weird little games that I can play on it. And so for me, the crank is just like a bonus. But that does make a lot of sense. It really does, even just from a visual standpoint, you know, make you like take notice and say, whoa, that's, I've never seen something like that before.
How do you combat the segment of the audience who's comparing the Playdate to something like the Switch or like even the Steam Deck?
I mean, I think it sounds like it's like the first time Panic has released something that is so widely known, and so it's kind of our first time kind of seeing the difference in understanding of what Playdate is. And yeah, I think it's definitely hard to see it, but like, you know, I think it's okay that people don't fully understand what we're making, and not everyone's gonna like the same thing, right? What I saw in the press reviews that were really cool and that we kind of saw internally too is just the season one games and how everyone seemed to have a very different opinion on what their favorite game was and what their least favorite was. And I guess it's just, you know, a preference of what people might like, and some people might not be nostalgic or as into like the, you know, black and white screen or like a smaller handheld system that's not, you know, graphically high fidelity or whatever it is, right?
What are you talking about? In marketing, all they ever say is that everything should appeal to everyone, and you, it's just, isn't that how it works,
And they're
right?
all
It's like,
different.
yeah.
They're all different human beings, right? Like,
I think I've said this, you know, a few different ways, but like if you want to play 3D, like new AAA 3D games on a device that has like a, you know, big OLED screen and has like, you know, 12 different buttons and whatnot, those already exist. Like, we don't have to give you that one. You have plenty of options. You have more options than we've ever had, you know, in history. So like you're well served already by that. And if that means that you don't need a playdate, that's fine. Then, you know, you just saved some money, I guess. If I understand that some people have to maybe make a monetary decision, like which thing do I buy? I think it's probably pretty rare that somebody's deciding between, you know, a PS5 and a Playdate. But if you do have to decide, you probably know what you want, right? If you want to play the you know, modern 3D games, then that decision's already made for you. I totally get that for some people it's also, you know, I don't get it. It's too weird. And maybe they'll get it eventually, maybe they won't. But again, I just want them to be happy either way. I think that's more important to us.
I think that's one of the things that to me has always really appealed about, you know, handheld devices in particular, is because, you know, you think about the Game Boy, which released in, you know, what was it, 89, but it, I mean, they were releasing games for that thing, you know, even through the Game Boy Color that could work on that original hardware all the way up till like, what, 2002, 2001, which is an insane amount of time. And so by the time that some of those were releasing, you were seeing, you know, games that were designed for consoles like the, you know, the Dreamcast even getting, you know, worked down into versions for this 8-bit, to say 8-bit hardware. And I think that's one of the things that I love about handheld devices and the Playdate especially, is that you're going to get experiences on this thing that you can't get anywhere else. You know, even they may not be like the same high fidelity experiences, but like you said, you can get those anywhere. And this, I think the coolest thing to me about the Playdate is that we're seeing so many unique and like, you know, exclusive different kinds of games come out for this specific handheld. So on everything that I said, you know, and just now about like games, you know, coming out in the future and stuff, I want to fast forward to a few years from now. Let's say like we're in Playdate, you know, launch year 3 or 4, which is like always my favorite because that's when all the JRPGs hit. What are your what is your dream future of Playdate and the games on it look like a couple years down the line?
Oh man, I want to see just like things I've never seen before in games. Like, yeah. I want really, like, creative, like, just new, you know, because this handheld system, like, itself, like, having a crank, it's so different, and I feel like with, you know, we have Pulp, the browser tool that you can use to make games, and also the SDK, like, and we've got a lot of really good, a lot of developers have said, like, the SDK has been really easy to work with, and I hope that people who've never made games before and want to make games and tell their story can, like, go in and just, like, do that. So that's what I'm most excited to see, just stories, yeah. or just, like, some, like, brand new thing, like, mechanic that's I've never seen before being made.
Rad.
I would definitely, yeah, I agree with that. What would make me the happiest is to see people making games for the first time. Obviously, that's, you know, really gratifying, whatever you make. Mm-hmm. And also to have people who are really creative and have wanted to do this, but have maybe felt that there's been this barrier to entry on other platforms. And so, you know, they might be primarily a writer or, you know, a visual artist or like a sound, you know, production person. And they want to do something with that, and they find a way to get into, you know, games, either by teaming up with somebody to work on a playdate game with them, or, you know, teaching themselves stuff to get started on it. If we can help somebody go from, you know, creativity in some other sphere, you know, of life to creativity in video games, I think that'd be amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I know Jordan has worked on some video games before. I personally never have, but Pulp is, that was like such an exciting aspect of this project to me. And I haven't touched it yet, but only because I just can't decide what I want to do with it yet. But I 100% do plan on diving head first into that and just trying to make, you know, something. Obviously, it's not as fully featured as, you know, the SDK, of course. And but I still think that people are going to make some really, really cool things with that. I was also curious, whenever you start your Playdate Season Pass, the games come out on a Monday. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every Monday morning. Pacific time, I guess. Yeah.
It's the return of Wii Shop Wednesday. Let's go.
was Monday morning, was that an intentional choice?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were thinking, like, should we do Wednesday? Like, is Monday weird? Because, like, you know, people are starting their work day or...
Yeah.
I mean, I think we kind of just decided with Monday just because. I don't know.
It's good for
I think it made sense.
Good for social media analytics, I'll tell you that.
I think we just thought, like, it's start week, it's easy to understand. People don't have to, like, learn a new thing. That's how I remember it being. People are going to play when they have the time, you know. So on some level it maybe doesn't matter a ton, but yeah. It's Monday.
Nice. I just didn't know if maybe it was like, if there was like a very businessy reason, or if it was like just wanting to, you know, give people something to look forward to on Mondays, because a lot of times people are not happy about Mondays.
Yeah. Hopefully that happens. I think it's very kind of you to assume that we have like an actual strategy behind it, but we're just flying by the seat of our pants.
No, I mean, I that's one of the aspects I love, though, is it seems like there's this like kind of fun nature even to just stuff like that, even to like these smaller things. Like I was watching, I think for a lot of folks haven't seen this because they haven't actually had the, you know, hardware in their hands yet. But I was watching some videos of just like the UI and just like what it's like to use the menu system. And it's gorgeous. And it's not even like, you know, it's, you look at like Addison has an Analog Pocket, which we just reviewed recently. And the UI is just very straightforward, standard, you know, easy to understand, but bare bones. And yet you look at like screen transitions and stuff on the Playdate, and it looks like, you know, some of the work that went into just animating those is like incredible. And I'm curious what, so, you know, cause I'm going to assume, Nevin, that you had a hand in a lot of that. And I'm curious what thought went into, the UI and just kind of the structure of, you know, using the Playdate in particular.
As a designer, I've worked as a designer for, I don't know, 20 years now, designing all sorts of things from software to like print stuff. And I've always thought that my job is to make things beautiful. And by that, I mean, it's like, yes, they should also be like usable and not bad, but like a chef's job is not to make edible food, right? That's, you would say like they're trying to create something, either never before seen or something that's, where you're gonna walk away, walk home that night and talk about it. So I'm shooting for something like that. You have to kind of split the difference with something as, kind of straightforward as like a OS, on a thing. You still need to be able to like go change your Wi-Fi settings quickly or whatever. But I find that there's a way to do it and not be kind of obnoxious about it and slow you down, but still have fun with it, especially in areas where like something's gonna take a little while, for instance, like downloading, a file. That's going to take a little while. We might as well do something fun with it. If you look at the games section of the settings, and you go there and you're like, download games or whatever, there's some fun touches because, again, it's dry, it's boring. We might as well give you something to do. After we finish that first stage of just making things work functionally, that's when, a little, angel on my shoulder is going like, okay, what did you forget? Like, you forgot to make it actually fun and nice and surprising or delightful or whatever. So I again, I feel like that's part of my job, and I'd be disappointed in myself if I just like made it work and then clocked out for the day.
That's awesome.
It is kind of interesting when you compare the Playdate to the Pocket or even the Switch, really, like how one, I mean, all three of them play video games, which at the end of the day, you're playing a video game because you want to escape and have some fun. And, the Switch and the Analog Pocket, the UI and menus and stuff are very sterile and just kind of there. And, but with like the Playdate, it's just everything about the Playdate really just oozes fun and creativity and
It looks. It looks
it
like a
simply
handheld.
exists to put a smile on your face.
It looks like a handheld designed in the Lego world. That's how I describe this. It's not like made
To
out of
me, it.
Legos. It just has that same vibe for some reason. I've been really curious. I love the hardware design. I love how it looks and everything. And it's, I'm sure that, I say I'm asking this question, walking on glass here because I know that it's been so tough to get this thing out, and you guys have just, pushed through all this work, and it's still launching. I know you guys are pushing the first ones out right now, but it's still a long way from being, I'm sure, where you guys want the release to be, which is in the hands of everyone who ordered it, I'm sure. But what are your thoughts for the future of this piece of hardware? Do you want to put out more accessories for it? Do you want to do iterations on it or make revisions? Or is this kind of, you think, Panic's end game as far as hardware goes?
God, Nevin, I don't think we've really talked about plans for
This was
like
my
a future.
concern. This was my concern because I was just like, man, they've had their heads down, I'm sure, and like
I mean,
that
we
this has
have
not
the
even been.
well, we have the stereo dock, right? And that's going to be our
That's coming
next
out.
thing, that we're making sure that goes smoothly. It's a speaker.
That was actually a thing I skipped, but oh my God, I'm obsessed with that little joy yellow, that little yellow joy
It's
cube.
so good.
I want it on my
It's
desk so
cool.
bad. It's rad.
Yeah. No, I do too. I don't have wood.
We have dreams, I guess, but at one little thing that you might have sussed out of our answer so far is mostly we're just kind of like going to the next thing and making sure that nothing breaks in the process, if that makes sense. So it's not that we don't have big dreams, but mostly you kind of keep those in your back pocket for like the sunny day when you might pull them out. And we're a really small company. Not sure if like if that's always apparent to people. We're 25 people, most of whom are not working on Playdate. They're like working on our other products,
Oh my
nowadays.
God. I mean, I
And
knew you guys were
so
a small company, but I had no idea it was that small. That's nuts.
Yeah,
right.
if you look at the Twitter replies, people definitely do not know that it is a small company.
Right. We get called a startup, even though we started in 1997. We're like older than Google. We get called like a, you know, VC, whatever company. We're not that. We're just a tiny private, you know, company. So I don't expect anyone to know any of that. You know, why would they? We're, you know, a random company they never heard of before. But just sort of to paint that picture of like, I think of our company as like the size and the sort of the philosophy of like a bodega or something like that, where it's like you show up in the morning and you do your job and like maybe you dream of being a pro tennis player, but you kind of keep that to yourself, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I will say that everybody at Panic is so passionate about Playdate right now. And the response has been like a million times bigger and nicer than we expected. So we would be complete fools to like just say, okay, well, that's it. You know, we're done with that. We'll certainly, you know, keep working on it.
Yeah, we're thinking about the next thing, which is like, all right, we announced the catalog in the update video about having some sort of way for people to purchase games on the device. And so that's kind of our next steps right now is how can we, you know, get more games to Playdate.
I actually missed that update. That's pretty cool. I for some reason, I thought it was only going to be sideload or the, you know, or the scheduled releases, but that's really awesome. I'm sure that's a big undertaking too. Just making a shop and maintaining it.
It's a lot.
So I feel like we've kind of touched on this a little bit, and maybe you have already answered this in some way, but what specifically do you guys think was the biggest challenge that the team has faced during this whole adventure?
I think, especially for the pandemic, it was manufacturing for Playdate because, you know, during the pandemic, and, you know, we're still in it, Malaysia, you know, was closed off for a really long time. And so no one was able to really go in without like approval and all these things. And, you know, it took a lot longer to get prototypes or whatever of the Playdate from the manufacturer to the Panic office to check to make sure it's at the quality that we wanted. And luckily we had two people, Steven Nersesian and what's the other person's name? Nevin?
I'm afraid I've never met her. I don't know her name. Sorry.
Yeah. So the two people had volunteered to help out, and they've been working on the Playdate, and they're pretty knowledgeable on like manufacturing and all that. They volunteered to go lived in Malaysia for like 6 months, I think, to make sure that the manufacturing was going well. And
jeez.
So, I think that might be the hardest because Panic is so used to working on software and like, oh, if something's broken, you just ship an update.
Yeah.
But with hardware, you know, once it's out there, it's like, well, we have to like, you know, it takes a lot longer to fix. So
our friend of the show, Mike Chi, you know, we had him on a few episodes ago and talk about the Flip Grip for the Switch that he launched a couple years ago. And, just hearing his stories of the manufacturing and the design and the iterations and all that, just for a single piece of plastic is like, I can't imagine for a functioning piece of hardware like this.
And I don't know if you guys were going to mention it or not, but I'll go ahead and kind of beat you to it. But you guys have also recently launched your own podcast from Panic, the Playdate podcast. And I listened to that first episode that came out, and that was something that I took away from it was, you know, how just involved and challenging that whole production seemed to have been. And so, like, especially in the middle of a pandemic.
Like, there was one time, I remember it was a few months ago, actually. I watched a video on, like, the design of modern analog sticks and just how many moving parts there are in them. And I was like, I remember my takeaway from that video was like, I can't imagine how hard it must have been to make this crank that's going to have to like drop into people's pockets and be durable enough to like, you know, survive the run of this console and also, you know, take a lot of abuse from players, you know, basically do it. Like, it's like even just that aspect of it, you know, it just seems nuts to me.
One thing with manufacturing is every single thing is a decision, right? Especially when you're doing something kind of from scratch. So you don't say like, okay, we're going to use like a, you know, like an action button here, like an A button. Well, what does that mean? Like which design of it? So like we went over all of these like button boards where you have dozens of them in a row and then you're pushing them to see, okay, well, which field do you like? And of course, it's like, you know, tasting 75 wines in a row. You have no idea anymore what you're tasting. So you have to like reset your palate and go back to it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, you know, that's just one of the decisions. It's like, okay, well, you like that feel, but like there's also durability. So what kind of mechanism is under it and so on? So it's all of this. It's like the screws, you know, tightening them in to which, you know, tightness should they do it? How many, you know, angles, you know, degrees should they, you know, turn it and so on. And, you know, it's not like one person is deciding all of that, but it's just like a whole ecosystem of decisions to be made. Yeah. It's just a lot. Making physical things turns out to be a lot of work. And then so much of it is not directly in our hands. It's not like in anybody's hands because you're working with all of these parts suppliers and vendors and shipping companies and whatnot. So we're just learning that it's very complicated.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's move on to like game stuff. We've talked a lot about the hardware. I want to talk about fun game things and also just kind of start working in some of our listener questions now. Addison, a lot of your questions revolve around this, so yeah.
Okay, so I'll kind of combine a couple here. I would love to know what your dream playdate game is, but also who would be like a dream creator that you would like to see make a game or even just some sort of product for the playdate.
I don't have a dream creator, but the first thing that pops in my head is like something like Cooking Mama, just being able to like, I don't know, cook, make dishes on your playdate and use the crank some way. We have something similar in the season one games, like where you're making potions and it does give that same similar feeling. But I'm like, I just want to like make food too. That's my favorite. my dream game.
I want personally, this is just for me, not like for the health of the platform or anything. I want to see interactive fiction. And my dream like playdate game maker would be like a novelist, like a Margaret Atwood or someone like that deciding to do their next thing on the playdate.
That'd be so cool.
Yeah, right? And it's like, that doesn't mean I just want to read a book on my playdate. You know, I want them to use the video game format but bring what they have to it, you know? I don't know what that is specifically. I want them to figure it out. That's why, you know, they get the, you know, Booker prizes and whatnot.
That'd be super cool.
I mean, obviously the first thing you see it when you think of it is like a fishing game. And I remember I just was just like, oh man, I want a new fishing RPG so bad where there's surprisingly few of those. And then I was reading the Polygon article a couple nights ago about, you know, kind of not really a postmortem, but just sort of the making of the playdate. And I was like, there was some mention in there where whoever was being interviewed said, you know, when people see it, they immediately think fishing game. And so all the developers thought, you know, oh, someone else is already going to make a fishing game, but now there's no fishing games, which cracks me up. Someday we'll get one. What's going to happen is in the second round of games, it's all going to be fishing games now.
It's fine by me.
Yeah.
I will still pay for that.
Yeah, I mean, if they're all different, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
It could still be really fun.
So sort of on that same note, what was like the, and this could possibly go into maybe some spoilers for the season of games, so I'll just say that ahead of time. But what was like the most surprising use of the crank in a game to you guys? While you're kind of thinking on that, I'll just say, you know, I've been following a lot of the coverage, and I feel like the game that I keep coming back to, and granted it is one of the ones that I've seen the most of, is Casual Birder, and how you, you know, kind of use the crank to focus the camera.
Yeah.
And it's not like the biggest mechanic of the game, I guess, maybe, but I think it's still such a unique and interesting thing to have there, and like not something that, you know, Casual Birder is just a really interesting game that I just can't imagine really seeing anywhere else.
Yeah, I really enjoy Casual Birder. I like looking at birds, and so it was a lot of fun to just take photos of like bird, like fig birds, I guess. And yeah, the zoom mechanic is very, very unique. A game that popped in my head was Echoic Memory. And I guess maybe not the mechanic itself that's like different, but like the game, how you're kind of matching sounds, music with the I don't even know how to explain it. It's kind of like a you're matching sounds and music and stuff, and then you're kind of cranking through and it's a really unique game that I've never seen or even like would have thought of making before. So
One thing that I really like about the crank as a game input is that it has this broad spectrum of uses where, like, in a casual birder, you're using it to focus your camera, right? So you're kind of being precise with it. In a game like Crankin, you're doing this full range from like going really like muscly, really hard, you know, to move quickly, you know, kind of like it's an athletic game. But then there are areas where you have to really slow down and be super precise, like you're, you know, cracking a safe. And I like that it allows for that full range of motion, you know, and different games use it different ways. The game Spellcork uses it for all of these, for instance. Whitewater Wipeout is, you kind of have to have, that one's kind of like jerky movements, you know, kind of like doing like a, you know, skateboarding trick or whatever.
That's the surfing game, right? That's the one where you jump in the air.
Exactly.
That one to me, like when I saw that for the first time, it something just like clicked immediately. I was like, oh, wow, it's a really cool way to use that crank.
It's something about the analog nature of it. You know, analog things are just along this like gradient that things like buttons aren't quite. And then touch screens, sure, they allow a range, but there's no real feedback. You know, you're just like moving your fingers on, you know, something smooth. Whereas the crank is something you hold and there's like the grip of your fingers on it and then the motion, you know, of your wrist and your whole arm around it. It feels kind of sporty in a cool way.
It's very tactile.
I think that's pretty unique about it. And I like that different games are really using different kinds of motion that you can do with something like that.
That makes me excited for like, weirdly enough, like a Breakout clone. Cause I hear a lot of people talk about that who like those kinds of games, like Arkanoid, who talk about, you know, you can't play them without an actual analog, like wheel controller, because like buttons just don't give you the like exact range of movement that you need. And that's really cool. I never really thought about like the analog nature of it, but that makes a lot of sense.
I don't remember the name of the game, but there was one of the 24 games kind of reminded me of Geometry Wars. And, you know, you would use the crank to kind of turn your ship 360 degrees.
Amaze?
It could be.
I'm sure that's it. I don't remember.
Could be Hyper Meteor, which is one where you're kind of like a top-down spaceship in a field.
Sounds like it.
Or Star Sled if it's like Vectrix type, vectory graphics.
Jordan, do you want to move into some listener questions now?
Let's do it. Let's move into some of these questions that all these goobers asked. We do not vouch for any of these people, but you know, they did ask some questions, so we'll go ahead and do a few of them. GUI asks, it's been super cool seeing all the different ways that developers managed to use the crank in the first batch of games, but I wonder if you guys ever thought about specific older titles that would also be improved from a physical crank mechanic. That's interesting. I had not thought of that. While you guys are thinking, I saw somebody on Twitter share a video of like a Doom port that had where you used the crank for like the chain gun, which is extremely cool. I love that.
Awesome.
It does run Doom.
Didn't someone do like a Tetris?
Like a Tetris where you rotate it with the crank.
One of them I saw was a Tetris where your rotation is not quantized to like 90 degree turns, but it's like analog.
That stresses me out, dude.
It was supposed to be kind of a troll Tetris. And like, you know, they do snap if you're close enough when they land, but if you're not, you just have a piece there at, you know, 30 degrees. Good luck. I think it was more of a prototype to show, you know, what a pain it would be. But I think it could become a game. Just, you know, figure it out.
I'm going to move on to this question from Hopscotch Plus, who asks, how quickly was the iconic yellow design locked in, and what other colors were suggested or thought about?
Yellow was probably day one. I don't think we had a lot of that. We tried a bunch of things, I'll say that. Like with everything, we tried a bunch of things, but the yellow one was just like such a clear winner for Cable, a co-founder of the company, and myself, that I don't think there was ever any doubt in our minds. He had on his desk for years a Famicom disk system, you know, disk.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are in that yellow, and it's like a square thing about that size. So just like catching it, you know, out of the corner of your eye, it's like, yeah, that's what I want it to look like when it's on my desk.
That is really interesting. I know that shade of yellow, too. I'm like looking around my bedroom as we're recording this. That shade of yellow is just very popular right now, too. So it's a good color to pick. That's like our whole, it's like the accent color for our whole bedroom.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. It's also something that electronics don't necessarily come in. I know the Switch came out in yellow, you know, a little while ago, and, you know, it looks awesome. But it's not the first pick for a lot of people. So it felt like, you know, we could kind of stand out.
Speaking of that, I'm gonna piggyback off that with a question from our friend Ben Raymer, who asks, when do we get a transparent play date? 90s kids in the chat. Only 90s kids will remember.
We would love to do like a lot of different ideas, but for now we're really just focusing on making and shipping the ones we promised to people. And then we'll see.
I guarantee, but I agree, that would be awesome. Someone out there is going to make a replacement shell for theirs that will be transparent. By the end of the year, you will see a transparent playdate. I can almost guarantee it.
Maybe not officially. Fingers crossed. But
yeah, not officially, but I was thinking about something I had. I don't remember if I just read it or if it was in one of that playdate podcast, but if I remember correctly, Cable had something, or someone brought something to Cable where he could just place it directly onto that Famicom disk system, and it would bring up like I don't know if it was like the hex code or what for that yellow, and they like went with exact one from using that. I thought that was really interesting, and
that's really rad.
Very specific, and I don't know, just cool. Ben also asked, thinking long term, is the plan for Playdate to be more of a hobbyist product or a viable commercial platform for smaller developers? I'm kind of guessing somewhere in between, but I would love to kind of hear your guys' take on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Panic's kind of, from how I gather the last 2 years I've been at Panic, is that, you know, we want to make cool things, fun things, but also it has to be viable business-wise, so that we can continue making and have the freedom to make cool things. And so kind of in that similar thinking process, like, I, you know, definitely a lot of developers want some way that they can make money off of their games. And so we you know, with Catalog, we want to give people the opportunity to sell their game in some way. And with Itch, you know, hopefully that'll give them another option to, with side loading such as Itch and, like, you know, their own website, that give them the opportunity to make and sell games and profit from it too. But, you know, I guess all the wide ranges, we just want to make it be a platform that is, you know, active, and there's just a lot of really cool things happening. And sometimes, you know, that requires having some money. People need money to make the time to make these things, right? Mm-hmm. So,
are you guys, you know, I don't know if you wanted to talk about this or not, but, you know, when it comes to like Catalog, would you, I mean, I'm sure that they would get better exposure on a shop that's directly on the Playdate versus, you know, selling something on Itch. So are you guys also hoping to get some kickback from selling things, from folks selling things on Catalog?
I want to kind of add a little bit to that as well. Like, if someone uses Pulp to make a game and they sell that, even if they're selling it on like Itch, do you guys get any sort of cut from that?
No, we don't take any cut from it. And our sort of thinking is that Catalog is going to be heavily curated for, you know, whatever Panic decides to release on.
Oh, okay.
our store.
That's very part cool. Of that I like that idea.
It's just so much work to have, you know, I was previously working at Valve, and so Steam has all the games on there, right? And it's a lot to really consider having endless amount of games. And so with 25 people, that's seems kind of, at least for me, seems very, very difficult to do. So having a less small selection of games and also giving the option for people to sell on itch is or, you know, anything outside of itch, doesn't have to be itch, right?
Does that mean anything to you, Arisa?
Wait, what?
I can say that the name Playdate happened at about the time that the color yellow happened, which in my memory is 75 years ago. It's probably only 10, but that was also there for a long, long time.
Wait, hold up. 10? You guys have been working on this thing that long?
I believe if you listen to the Playdate podcast, it opens with Jesper from Teenage Engineering reading an email from Cable telling, hey, we want to do this wacky thing. And I believe that email is from 2011. Is that right, Arisa?
Yes. Yeah.
So that gives you some idea.
Wow. It was originally supposed to be for like, wasn't it like the 10th
the 20th anniversary or yeah. Yeah. Yep. What ended up happening is actually it was our 25th anniversary last week when we started shipping, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
That's awesome.
Amazing coincidence.
That's really cool that it worked out that way.
Yep. Yep.
One of the questions that Kyle asked, I think you guys have kind of answered this a little bit already, but he said,
I didn't know if we wanted to do that one.
Yeah, I do. He said, how do y'all, it's just very straightforward. And I think it's a good one to ask. How do y'all deal with the little bitches who complain about the lack of a backlight, even though they've never designed or shipped anything in their entire life?
Arisa, what's your backlight script?
Yeah. I'm about to say, what's your official
honestly, I'm still trying to figure it out. I don't know.
Well, so M-Brains kind of asked, the same thing, but maybe a little bit more diplomatically. They said, early reviews are full of positivity until they get to the lack of a backlit screen. Is it simply nostalgia, cost effectiveness, or something else that drove the decision to go without a backlight?
It is such a different screen. Like, if you're expecting a Game Boy, it doesn't look like the Game Boy screen because it's much higher res and it's like high contrast. If you're expecting e-ink, it's a bit like e-ink, except that it can refresh at 50 frames per second. Mm-hmm. And if you're expecting, you know, your phone screen, it's not that either. Yesterday was a super sunny day here in Portland. It was like 70 degrees, completely clear skies, just like yellow and sunny. And I was out in a hammock in my backyard, and looking at the Playdate in that light, it looks incredible. It just looks better the more light you put on it. And so it was amazing to play there. I then pulled out my phone to answer a text message, and I could barely read it out in sunshine. Obviously, phones are fine. Nobody really hates their phone screens. But that's just one example of, you know, it's going to be good in some environments and not as good in others. And like, maybe, I don't know, maybe we all need to, you know, go out a little more.
Hell yeah.
That's not always an option, but
the official Panic answer is touch grass. I love it.
Yes, yes, exactly. A lot of people have said that. Yeah.
Boktai 3 coming to the Playdate.
Oh, hell yeah.
People have paper books to, you know, I don't know, you turn on a lamp. That's kind of the solution.
As somebody who like I've got like a Kindle Oasis, which is one of the it is backlit, but it's like, you know, like an e-ink reader, like you said, or whatever they call that. I just love that. I love that vibe. I really do, of having something that, and I'm somebody who plays a lot of Game Boys too. And I always keep, you know, I've modded a few with backlights, but I always keep like some original ones around because it just feels good sometimes to play them out, like you said, outside in the daylight, or just like wherever you're traveling. But also, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it, because when we got our hands and when we demoed it at a press demo at PAX, I think it was 2019. Like, that was the thing that really stuck out to me. Was I was like, oh, this is not like a you know, regular, you know, non-backlit screen. Like, it is super reflective. Yeah. And even on the show floor, I could see it just fine. And so I feel like some folks have got to be kind of exaggerating a little bit, because yeah, there's no backlight, but I mean, if you just turn a lamp on, you know, I'm sure it'll be pretty okay.
I was just gonna say that, you know, some people maybe their eyes aren't as good as others, and I recently got LASIK, and so it's so much easier for me to look at the screen. So yeah.
It'd be a great console to play when I have a migraine. I hate playing backlit games when I have a migraine.
The screen really doesn't look like any other screen like out there really that I can think of. It's just one of those things where, like, you know, similar to, you know, the 3DS, like once you see it, you kind of get it and you're like, oh, okay.
All right, Addison, let's do we have any other questions? How many do we have?
You do. You've got one more.
I do. Oh my God. Okay. All right, let's go ahead. I think we're going to close this out with my last question. I forgot about, I was debating whether I was going to ask this or not. Okay. Here's my last question. And I hope you guys have some answers for this, because it's really been on my mind and on my heart this week. While meditating on the construction of the Playdate, I found that it features a very satisfying, simple, and tactile, yet almost like vintage design that subtly reminds me of the technology designed for the 2013 Spike Jonze film Her, in which acclaimed Joker Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with his phone. If I were dating a Playdate, what would the crank be used for? And don't make it weird. Don't make it weird. But if I were friends with a Playdate, how would the crank be used in our friendship, we'll say?
I'm letting you take this one, Arisa.
No, you're the
Oh man,
designer, Nevin.
Devin.
You're the designer. I want Nevin
Are you
to
guys,
answer this.
Okay. Are you guys telling me that you haven't been asked this 1,000 times already? You don't have a go-to answer for this.
You would hold hands with it. That's what you would do. It's
Oh, I love
a
that.
little arm that comes out and
Awesome.
gives you a wave, and the yellow thumb, you know, spins around. It's your buddy. That's where you hold hands. And when you're playing a game, you are in fact holding hands with your playdate, and you're playing together.
That's great. I love it.
Oh my God.
That's great.
How did you have the absolute perfect answer?
He's a designer. I knew he would. I knew he'd find something.
My
The
first major in college was diplomacy. So that's
playdate.
not a joke.
Oh, that's great.
The
No, to be
playdate with the crank out, it does look like it's waving at you.
It sure does. I had never thought of that until you just said it, but it really does. It has such a friendly little analog vibe to it. And yeah, I dig it a lot. I'm very excited to get my hands on one as soon as possible. Man, thank you guys so much for coming on the show and dealing with all of our and our listeners' weird questions. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you
Yeah,
so
no
much.
problem.
Anything that you guys want to, you know, plug or mention before we sign off here?
No, I just want to say thank you for, you know, having us in your show, and thank you all the listeners for asking those pretty amazing questions that you had for us. So
Well, yeah, we really appreciate you guys coming on, and good luck with the rest of the launch of the Playdate, I guess, since it's you know, it's a slowly rolled out thing. We're very excited to see when catalog launches, and I am very excited for that adorable little box that I can stick my Playdate on and put a pencil in. Please get that to me as soon as possible.
We're trying hard.
I'll
I
just
trust
settle for my Playdate first. I'm all right with getting my
Nice.
Playdate first. That's cool with me.
Nice.
See, I'm one of these people who spends a lot of money on things that I just put on my desk. So, you know, Playdate's fine. I want the box. Let's be honest. No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah, thank you, Arissa and Nevin, for coming on. We really appreciate it. If you guys want to learn more about the Playdate, you can go to Playdate's official website at play.date, or, you know, you can find Panic on social media. We are very excited to get our hands on one, and we are especially excited to start to get one so we can start reviewing games for the show each week as they release. We also want to say thank you. I want to say thank you to Addison for being the best co-host ever, as always. And I want to say thank you to the folks that let us use their music for our intro and outro. Our intro is Time Trials by Hyper Potions, and our outro is Hut by the River by Sound Market. Thank you guys so much, and if you want to check out their music, you can find a link to more information in our pinned tweet. Oh, and before I go, if you are looking for any more information about the Playdate, you can look in our show post, where I have provided links to all kinds of the stuff that we've talked about here today, as well as trailers and the new Playdate podcast and other cool Playdate related things. If you would like to pre-order a playdate, you can still do that. They are $179 USD, but we are very excited to get our hands on one ourselves. And they're now shipping in like 2023, so it'll be a little while before you get yours. But you can still place your pre-order, so go ahead and do that as soon as possible so you can get your hands on one. All right, well, that's the show. Thank you guys so much for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And this is Addison and Jordan from Pocketoid saying see you later.
Okay, love you, bye.